Let's see what happens when we dare to color outside the lines. You're listening to Color Mixology, the debut podcast from Sherwin-Williams.
Hello, and welcome to Color Mixology, the podcast where we connect with the creative people who are shaping the color and design landscape. I'm your host, Sue Wadden, interior designer and head of color marketing at Sherwin-Williams. On the last episode, we had our friend DeBito on the show to talk about the element of unexpected in design. If you missed it, then make sure you check it out. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of speaking to Nicholas Obeid. He's a New York City designer whose quietly luxurious designs have been the talk of the industry in publications like Elle Decor, Vogue, Wallpaper, and more. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining us. We're excited to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be with you.
You know, we had the privilege of meeting last December. I can't believe it's almost a year at the Elle Decor event in New York City. And I remember thinking, we sat kind of next to each other and I just had such a great time listening to you talk about design. So we are excited for the world to meet you.
That was a very fun evening. I remember Nick Olson and Alyssa Capito giving me therapy sessions, which was fun.
The wine was flowing. It was a beautiful night. I wish all my work functions were like that.
Yeah.
So I like to start these conversations off by asking, how did you get started in this design business? Where did it all begin? How did that shape you into who you are now?
Sure. I'll try to keep it brief. Generally speaking, I feel as though I was never not in the design industry. I always sort of knew this was where I was going. And that was made evident to me by family members that weren't as lucky, but I already knew, like, from day one, I was going to be working in this field and I was going to move to New York. And that's been a blessing. I've been very crystal clear on that. More sort of granular, I studied architecture for a year at University of Michigan. I felt it was a bit rigid and less client facing than I wanted. So I transferred to Michigan State and focused on interior design. And in that program, had an assignment to interview designers, came to Chicago. I popped into a Jonathan Adler store and met their head of retail. She saw my resume and basically went above and beyond what she was supposed to do and offered me an internship, not at one of their stores, but directly at HQ with their head of design and head of interior design.
That's pretty unbelievable. That was a great start.
Yes, it was a really fantastic catapult for sure. So I did an internship and seemingly won them over. And I worked for Jonathan as soon as I finished school and moved to New York. I had a job working for him as the initially assistant to the interior designer, who's a close friend. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I will say, you know, it quickly expanded into managing creative services. So I was able to sort of touch every point of the photo, from designing the furniture to producing the shoot, designing the catalog, working on the marketing. So that job was very formative for me because Jonathan was great. He was such a mentor, still is a friend, but he really allowed me to sort of dip my toes into every facet of design, which I now run my own business and am employing all of those sort of tools I learned, which was great.
Not many designers get that much experience to start. So that was a lucky moment. Not a lucky break, right? You earned that, but it was great.
Yeah. I mean, it's always luck, but it's being prepared for the luck, you know? So you have done the preparation before the opportunity comes. But I distinctly remember there was a day that the head of product design was out of town, and that tended to be the department Jonathan was most excited about, naturally, as we all are. And he wanted to see one of the sort of iterations of a product he designed. And in her absence, I sort of opened up AutoCAD and drew the table and sort of demonstrated that I was, you know, able to use this skill set, and quickly started working with her and him directly on product design, which was
unbelievable.
Thanks to him allowing me. Yeah, it was really a great opportunity.
Well, I mean, look, he obviously saw talent, right? I mean, he recognized that. But did you touch accessories as well? I love the Jonathan Adler accessories.
They're super fun. I did not. I focused on furniture and
furniture.
Light. Yeah,
amazing.
And then 7 years later, creatively split, and also just wanted to run my own business. I always knew that was the path. So yeah, I started my own company 7 years after, and have been
busy ever since.
Going strong since. Yeah, it's been a great ride.
So what's going on, you know, now? Like, what are you up to? what's exciting, where are you taking this business? I know you've got a lot going on. So you want to talk about that?
So perfect segue from my experience at Jonathan, but immediately after starting my own company, I began working with CB2 on designs that we would sort of commission that they carry, that they work with a lot of designers out of house. And so it was really fantastic to reach so many households with that type of design collaboration. You know, it's really incredible. I know firsthand from siblings and friends and people immediate in my life that do not have access to a full-scale interior design project and relationship with a designer, that the impact that buying one coffee table can make every single time they go home, it can really not be emphasized enough. It's really an incredible feeling. And so in my everyday high-end residential work, it's an intimate relationship with a specific family. And then 2 years later, there's this sort of baby that we birth, and that might change their life.
Right.
But hopefully, with a relationship, with a relationship like that is much more intimate and long-term. But with something like CB2 or even the furniture collection that I just launched, to be able to quickly have an effect on somebody's home is really, you can reach so many more people. It's just really incredible to hear the feedback.
You know, that was one of the favorite things that I remember about our dinner conversation, is that you have these really high-end clients and you do this amazing work and it seems, you know, unattainable. But at the same time, you're the designer that gets out to the showrooms, like working on site, doing installations, like, you know, going to the paint store, we talked a lot about that. Like your process, that was what impressed me the most, is that you're a really high-end designer, but you're not scary, right? Like this is your life.
Oh no, I'm definitely on the floor, like dusting before the client walks in the room. I'm absolutely hands-on and not above any part of the process. That's for sure.
That's like my favorite thing about you. So in this segment, we wanted to talk about this idea of like modern luxury. And what does modern luxury mean? You know, there's words in the kind of the trend world of stealth wealth or quiet luxury. And we wanted to talk about that because for some of our listeners, they have no idea what that means. And so yeah. I think you represent that really well. So, you know, could you talk about, you've been quoted as saying your personal approach is considered yet visceral, you know, so what does that mean to you?
So that is more specifically related to interiors. And what I mean by that is, at least the interiors that I work on, they have somewhat of an inherent formula, right? So there might be a super heavy set of furnishings on either end of the room, and then there's light and leggy and open and glass items sort of mixed in to sort of balance the weight. The same goes with sort of like the color and the texture variance. I think all that to say, sometimes you need to mess that up, and that's when the visceral sort of emotion comes in the process. And I think a room feels really dynamic when there is somewhat of a sort of balanced formula, but then there's a wild card and it sort of intrigues you.
Yeah, like I would say a happy accident, like something that's unexpected that just totally changes the face of the room.
Maybe it's a chair that the client, you know, it's an heirloom in their family, and you sort of begin to shift the design of the room around that. And it takes you somewhere you weren't really expecting. And it can oftentimes be super dynamic.
Yeah. So then what does the idea of quiet luxury mean for you?
So quiet luxury, I mean, this is perhaps a literal translation, but if you're looking at a room, it should whisper. It's not like a loud scream of luxury. It's a Loro Piana soft wool, or it's, you know, not like a big gleaming brass chandelier, but maybe there's a little like brass cuff detail on a chair. It's a more desaturated, subtle color variation. It's a relaxed layout and floor plan, right? It's nothing too symmetrical and perfect. It's all beautiful things. I definitely believe in investing in your home, but it is sort of demonstrating that in a less pretentious way and a less literal way, and really more about just like sort of sumptuous textures and materials, and just it can be really, really expensive, valuable, rare, but it needs to be sort of subtle and discreet and, you know, not so obvious.
So if you had advice for, you know, a homeowner that maybe isn't working with a designer about investment pieces, where would you advise them to start? Like a thing, like rugs or a great sofa, you know, like pick, like what's a good starting point to start to build?
Oh, I mean, the number one thing to invest in is your sofa. That's hands down. The first piece, I always at least take this approach in my projects, but you know, the upholstery pieces are the ones you really touch the most. So that might mean like a custom bed or headboard or a sofa that is a little bit out of your comfort zone and a little more than you maybe thought you were going to spend on a sofa. But that's really something that can last some of them forever, many for generations, but they just have to be taken care of. And you really have to choose a fabric that is, you know, of super softness and durability. And that's really what you're going to touch the most. The side table next to it can be $45 off an Instagram vendor or on Cherish. You know, you found it at a flea market, and that's perfectly fine. And, you know, we love to mix those in. But when it comes to upholstery, I think that's really where the value comes in.
And the investment should be. Totally agree. So the idea of quiet luxury is understated, and I dare say minimalistic sometimes. Minimalism for quite a long time has been about sort of like that Scandinavian, like very stark aesthetic, but I don't see that in your work. Your work is warm, right, and very balanced, and have used those words. So how does color play in your space as well to sort of deliver on this idea of like quiet but luxurious?
Yeah, I think this one is less of an intention and more of just sort of my gravitation toward these tones, but a slightly desaturated color that feels almost like a neutral. So to me, it's not like a purple, it's mauve. It's not bright orange, it's brick. It's not emerald green, but rather like olive green. All of these that add dynamism to a room that if you first look at it, though, you really don't consider it to be colorful. You consider it to be a pretty muted palette, but there is definitely depth of color. It's just a little less in your face.
Again, that idea of the understated, that's why as a colorist, I like laugh, you know, this is the most colorful room in my space. And it's going to change soon to be probably black or a dark charcoal because I get a little fatigued at color when you look at it every day.
Yep.
And especially in your home. So I like things to be muted and a little unassuming at home because it just kind of refreshes my mind at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, is there a specific project you could talk about that scream or maybe whispered, like you said, quiet luxury to you?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, for this topic of quiet luxury, the most obvious answer for me is a piece of furniture from my collection rather than an interior I've done. And we can just use a table as an example. I have this table that's just made out of wood and glass, right? So seemingly super simple materials, but it's not the traditional way that you might see glass. It's a 2-inch thick, like hot cast glass with this sort of mottled texture underneath. And the wood is solid, but it has like the grain brushed and it's applied like with a whitened finish. So every angle you look at this table from with the sort of architectural details and the construction, but also this sort of varied glass glow, you catch it from a different light. Like that's an example for me of quiet luxury. It's not a lacquered wood piece with brass cuffs and Greek key motifs and all the, you know, typical like luxurious in quotes, sort of obvious, glamorous things. But to me, that's luxury. Like that's more quiet because, you know, you live with it, you touch it, you can feel how solid it is. You view it in different angles and it just has this beautiful glow to it.
So I love your description of the product development process. What's your favorite thing about that? Is it the material selection?
Oh, I mean, on the collection I launched this year, I'm so proud to say I've fully single-handedly found the vendors all local in New York and California through many rounds. I've prototyped it. I designed them in 3D and I, you know, with the specifications to be sort of manufactured by these incredibly talented artisans. And I photographed it myself in the studio. I designed the tear sheets and I designed the site and I just really had my fingers on every part of the process. So it's really them that teach me though, these artisans that make that table, for example. You know, you develop it. And this is why I'm really big on physically prototyping rather than just a render, because you, along the process, realize that that glass shelf, which is stunning and super solid, but it does have some variance in the way it's poured, right? So if it's going to be somebody's bedside table, it has to be flat. They can't have their water glass sliding down the table. So the artisan that makes this table from solid wood actually receives the glass shelf and levels by hand the sort of wood niche that the glass sits on to accommodate the variances in the glass and make it level in the end, you know? And so that's something that I would have never really imagined as I was sketching this out, that, you know, when you prototype it, you learn.
You learn. Well, where does inspiration come? Is it just in the city? Is it travels? I imagine it would like be overwhelming. There's so much inspiration out there. How do you get to the like essence of what a new collection is going to be?
It's definitely overwhelming. I mean, for furniture specifically, the inspiration tends to be architectural. I just kind of think sometimes to a fault, but it's just sort of how my brain works. But I really think in terms of geometry and form, and then I apply the sort of material best suited to view that form. So I would say architecture is the number one inspiration for that. When it comes to interior design, I think the client is often a big source of inspiration, just asking them like, what colors do you like? What colors do you hate? What do you want to feel like in your house? That's a great question. You know,
yeah, good programming. Yeah,
that'll really just give you the answer right away.
I love the idea of, you know, it's a different promise, right? Like product design, furniture development, that's so you, right? That's your vision into creating a product. Whereas an interior, you're a professional, right? So you're designing for your client. That's a very important distinction that maybe not everybody realizes.
It is. And the process is sure to change along the way when it's an interior. Whereas when it's furniture, you know, it might modify based on construction parameters and hoops, but the project is inevitably going to end up close to what I imagined. Whereas the interior sometimes really, they throw you for a loop.
Things can happen. I'm certain everyone is going to go check out your website, or we'll talk about that in a minute. But what's the favorite material that you're loving right now? Like from a, even just product or interiors, what's your favorite thing?
Favorite thing that I'm really starting to incorporate interiors, not necessarily my product, is sort of like a nickel, like a modeled nickel, like or an aged brass, mm-hmm. something with like a depth to it, a nice warm metal, nothing too cold.
Patina. So yeah, that's you. We're hearing it here everywhere. Everybody, like silvers are starting to come back a little bit. And then what about on the product side? Do you love wood or do you love mixed use materials or the combination?
On the product side, I'm going to tout a pendant that I prototyped 5 times to get right, but it is parchment. So it's natural goat skin and it's sourced in New York. It is sanded down to a thickness that is consistent. And then within the family of this artisan hands it over, and a very talented woman stitches this shade to a hand bent frame over the course of 20 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And it would be so much easier for me to just use a roll of parchment paper, you know, that's in the style of, but I'm finding a lot of positive feedback from designers who understand the sort of depth of tone and texture to this parchment, which, you know, is just emits the most beautiful glow as a lighting fixture. So I would say that's the one that is reaping the most rewards for the effort.
Do you capture those stories in like your literature or anything, like the mark of your product?
I try to. I mean, storytelling is definitely important with product, especially of a certain sort of category and price offering for sure. But I don't know that it gets across as easily as one would like it to.
Well, it's hard.
I think these days you're inundated with product and it's hard to understand, but really imperative to understand the difference between a table that you can get for $100, which is somehow still an expectation for a piece of furniture.
That's crazy.
Versus something that might cost you a few $1,000s, and really knowing the story behind the artisans that are getting the chance to execute a piece of art with a lot of time and hand work is, it's important to get across.
It is. So one of some of the favorite places, are you a New York guy? Like, do you love shopping in New York or do you get to shows outside of the US or what's your favorite places to go?
So for vintage, I mean, Marché in Paris tends to have the most items that resonate, I would say. For a lot of pieces in my projects, I'll custom design them and make them with artisans locally here in LA and New York.
Yeah.
So that tends to be the majority just because I get to exercise my product designer / interior designer at the same time.
And it's a challenge, I would imagine, to travel because you are so busy. So how do you fit all those things in, right, when trying to launch a new collection? So I imagine that it's difficult. I don't know. I can't wait to see everything that you're going to share when you share your resources. So, you know, final question. This has been amazing. But tell us, because we are a paint brand, what are some of your favorite colors? Like, what are some of your go-to? Can just be generalized.
Yeah, there's... I mean, lately, what I'm really loving is sort of like a very pale, buttery yellow. I'm working on a cafe you'd mentioned, you know, what's happening, what's next on the horizon for me. One of those is a 6,000 square foot sort of wellness spa that I'm very excited about. Yeah. And so, of course, adhering to their sort of branding and coloring tends to be quite quietly luxurious, of course, for a spa. But in the cafe, we're working on sort of a little bit more of an exciting color palette, and one that I'm really, really loving is like a buttery yellow.
Wow. Well, that's a, like a little step out of the comfort zone, maybe.
Yeah, it is a bit. It's definitely a risk. I think in terms of Sherwin-Williams tones, there's one, for example, to get a little more specific, it's called like Warm Oats.
Yes.
That I've used. And that is like a perfect example. It's kind of similar to this tone in my shirt, but it's like a sort of chalky neutral. There's green undertones. So in different daylight, it might read as a little more tan versus a little more green. But that's the type of like nuanced depth in a tone that I look for that feels quietly luxurious, if you will.
I totally agree. And I will say that the idea of khakis, so like colors that I would consider utility, are definitely coming out in the trend vocabulary as something to pay attention to. And we haven't really seen those green undertone neutrals in a while.
And especially applied in like a more luxurious fabric. Like I love a silk in that tone, you know?
Just gorgeous.
Whereas typically you would see that in sort of like a blue or a shocking red.
Yes, like something like super, super jewel tone, right? Exactly, like to imply, like that's what I love about neutrals is that you can get the elegance and the refinement in something super handmade, bespoke, amazing, or it can be a canvas, you know, sailcloth, right? And you could still have that full range in a color and it can still be luxurious no matter what your price range is. It's how you style it and put it together. So this was a fascinating conversation. Anything else that we can share with our listeners? Like one thing I did want to ask. So do you do mixed use? Like, do you do residential and commercial, or is this kind of your first commercial project?
No, it's not my first. I do get to work in both, and they're totally different. At the cafe that I designed, it's in New York. It's incredible. I would love for everybody to check it out. It's called Isle of Us. And that's something where I really incorporated a lot of color, but that cafe, Isle of Us, just being involved in the branding design myself and the interior, just sort of, I spent some time there watching how people interact with it, and to be able to touch like every one of the points that a customer experiences, like from the signage outside to the bag that they grab, you know, the design of the counter and the lighting and the sort of seating in the back. So that has been a really fruitful project, just touching every part of the process. And,
I mean, that's like amazing, but that is so much personalization from your hand, right? To work on all those aspects. I don't know when you sleep.
Client.
Do you sleep or vacation?
I'm actually really big on sleep, so that's a non-negotiable, but do not come for my sleep. Everybody in my life knows that. But no, the client on that one is a friend. He's amazing. And we actually like took remnants of stone and broke them up by hand and arranged them into geometric forms, and then an incredible team in Brooklyn like laid concrete over that. So we like hand applied the sort of broken terrazzo, if you will, like dining tables, and it's just incredible. So he was a great partner to work with.
See, this is like, you know, you're a fancy designer, but you also like get in there. I love that. That's so great.
Believe me, and him in the back of like an industrial building with like pretend like fake eye gear and a sledgehammer.
Yeah. And that was like, I think you had said when we met the first time that one of your favorite places is the hardware store.
Love the hardware store.
Like just go in there and lose yourself for a minute. Yeah, that's so cool. Well, we so appreciate your time. This has been very generous. We know you're a busy guy. So if people want to find you, give us all the things. How can they find you?
All right. It's pretty straightforward. So it's at @Nicholas_Obeid. And the website is nicholasobeid.com.
And then that's where your collections are. Everything that is Nicholas Obeid is?
All things Nicholas Obeid. So furniture, interiors, and photography.
Amazing. Well, you have been a charming guest. I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
Yeah. And can't wait for what's next. We'll be paying attention.
Hope to see you at another El Decor dinner soon.
I know, me too. In our next segment, we're going to speak with Megan Canseco. She is our December Designer of the Month, and we are featuring a project that uses subdued, quiet luxury palette in a hospitality space. Megan, hi, and welcome to Color Mixology.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I am so excited to talk with you.
Well, we always start by getting to know our designers a little bit. So tell us how you got started in design.
Sure. Like most people, it was something that happened young, to be honest, for me. My dad worked for British Airways when I was growing up, and so we got to travel a lot. And one of the things that I picked up on was the fact that we were always visiting monuments. We were visiting museums. We were visiting castles. And it was like this built environment that I knew was really important. And I didn't quite grasp why it was important, but I knew it made me feel different things in different spaces, right? And most of the time it was feelings of awe. And so I think that sort of put the bug in me that, like, this is important. I think I might want to do something with this. And that's sort of how it all started. But then I went to school, I went to college for it, and it's been nothing but interior design ever since.
Ever since. Do you have your own firm, or are you a one-man crew?
I am, yeah. So I spent most of my time in commercial interior design, all of my career in commercial interior design, until about 2 years ago when I started my own little studio that is just me and sometimes my husband helping me with technology things.
And that's amazing. Wow. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. I have a small family and it just seemed like the right time to make the jump. I work from home, so it's kind of nice to be around a lot.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, the project that we feature in our December Designer of the Month spread is the Welcome Center at the estate of Nemacolin. It's the sort of the reception area. That's what we're featuring. So tell us a little bit more about this project.
Sure. So Nemacolin is like a big resort. It has multiple buildings. It's sort of a campus of sorts. And so one of amazing things that they offer are these homes and estates. So you don't have to stay in the hotel. You can actually stay in a standalone home or they're really more estates. and so they wanted that portion of the experience to have its own check-in point. And so they wanted to renovate a building, which was the check-in point for like their wilderness excursions. So when I went to tour it, it was like animaled out. There was prints and
yes,
it looked like a lodge. You know, I think the reception desk there was a log cut in half and it had its moment.
It did. It did. Sure. It did. 80s lodge style.
Yes. They wanted a new check-in point for those people who were staying in the homes and estates.
So how did you get to the idea of this quiet luxury as your first design principle? Was that a request of the client or did you want to lead them in that direction?
No. So Nemacolin is luxurious, just outright. But these homes and estates are a little bit different than staying in their hotels. And so it needed to sort of bridge the gap and find a perfect balance of that grandeur of all of their main buildings and hotel elements that they have, but also make it inviting because they're sort of like the comforts of home. So it was really the blending of those two is how it landed on that sort of quiet luxury look.
I love that. And it is, if the listeners have not been there, it is a really unique experience because there's a golf resort and there's a major like plantation style main building and every area has its own look and feel. So it's kind of probably hard from a design perspective to unify those elements and have it feel cohesive. And, you know, with all of those layers of design on this big, huge property, the idea of quiet luxury is such an understated aesthetic. So how did you approach that challenge of like evolving styles to be such an elegant minimalist expression?
Yeah. So I really wanted to just focus on good materials, right? I think with quiet luxury, it's really in the details. And so I wanted to make sure that the smaller elements felt really special. I definitely utilized like a lot of neutrals and high contrast so that everything feels special, but not one main thing is special, if that makes sense. It's a lot of texture and just utilizing really beautiful materials and good craftsmanship.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that idea of high contrast. Like what is that? For those that don't know what that means, what does that mean to you?
Sure. So the high contrast to me is having, in this space, there's one main color and it's a very nice, like creamy, it's lime wash from Sherwin-Williams.
Beautiful. Love that color.
And I basically pair that with very dark colors as well. So I highlight the architecture in this space with tricorn black. And so it's like this creamy and the black, the high contrast of the colors, I think really creates a very bold statement without it being in your face. And so I love a black and white, sometimes maybe to a fault, but I think it really creates a luxury, a feel.
We have an annual color trend forecast, which we call Color Mix, and it's an annual expression of trend palettes and what we're seeing in the future. And we talk about it every year. And one of the inspired collections, one of our core capsules this year was called Chrysalis. And it really celebrates the idea of quiet luxury and everything that you stated. It was about balance and the idea of simple neutrals, but like in all different ranges. So there were highs and lows, darks and lights, and coming together in this like really balanced approach. And I love how a beautiful palette of neutrals is not boring. It defines a restrained space, but it's absolutely stunning when done right. And that's not always easy. So do you have any kind of tips other than black and white on ways to layer in neutrals to create sort of that idea of quiet luxury in an interior?
Yeah, for sure. One of them is just playing with texture, for sure. I think when you start to layer in, it can be the same exact color, but when it's a semi-gloss on the wall and then it turns into like a boucle on a upholstered piece, they're very different, yes, but they're the same tone. And just those like layering of textures and sheens really starts to like elevate it a little bit. And so I think you can look at a bunch of neutrals, like you said, and think, oh, that might be boring. But when you actually play with the like density of it all and the textural part of it, I think it can be really beautiful. And so I would say like to not shy away from having the metals sing, the hardware sing, and the upholstery being the same, but just sort of playing with that varied textures, I think is really, really nice.
Yes, it's really nice. And again, it's like subtle, like the idea that these finishes are layered together. So let's talk a little bit about sheen. Do you have favorite sheen specs that you use on different projects? What are you loving?
I'm playing more with sheen than I have really ever before. Coming from like the corporate side of my past work and commercial, it's like, there's a lot of like, here's your rules and this is what you have to do. But I think when you get into the hospitality realm, there's a little bit more fun you can play with.
Absolutely.
Residential even more so.
Yes.
And so I think right now we're seeing a lot of that sort of, there are like lime washes, right? So there's maybe even a little bit of variability in the sheen itself. I love the idea of doing a high gloss on everything. That's been really beautiful recently.
Yeah, talk about luxurious, right? It just looks so mirror finish. It's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. So I think really, and even if you do the same, again, if you do the same color, but you're doing maybe a flat on one surface and a high gloss on another, like if your trim is high gloss, but your wall is flat, like I think that could be really fun too, because the color changes when light hits it differently. And I think that play is very subtle, but can be really beautiful.
And done with the right color, it's amazing. But when there are maybe colors that are a little off, that can be jarring, right? So understanding sheen is an important part of the specification process for a designer.
Yes.
And, you know, particularly in hospitality spaces, like you said, there's always all these elements. There's always pattern and fabrics and materials and different lighting. And it's always so experiential that those variations and sheens can really tell their own story. So when you talk about the colors that you used on this project, can you, like, were some of your favorites that you want to talk about and how they sort of brought the space to life?
Yeah, sure. So I used lime wash everywhere.
Can I tell you something? That's like my hallway color.
Is it?
I love it. It's a great color.
It is. It's beautiful. I love it because it's not a bright, bright white. It has some life to it. And so I think it pairs well with a lot of other natural neutrals, which is really what I needed as the field color in this space. One color that I love, and I actually put it on the exterior of the building in this project, is Urbane Bronze. And I know it was like the color of the year a few years ago.
It was.
To me, it's still there.
It is. It's such a usable bronze. I love it. It's great on exteriors.
It is so beautiful. It's not black. It's not brown. There's no yellow. Like, it's just beautiful.
Yes, I agree. We love that color. It was a great color. It is a great color, but a great color of the year.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So that's one of my favorites. One thing that I don't think necessarily shows up in a lot of the photography of this space is we used Night Watch on this project in some casework. And that color is also really pretty because it almost seems like it's black until you're up on it. And then you're like, no, this is green.
Yes.
And it's a dark green. It's got a lot of depth to it. But I love those very minor like color changes within paint that you can play with where, you know, if you don't want to be a super bold in your face green, to turn to a color like Nightwatch, I think is really fun because it's there and it's different, but you almost have to like find it, like it's a mystery.
Yeah, inspect it a little. So it's like a chameleon color. I love those too. And two of the colors that you use for were from our designer color collection, which was launched in, you know, like right before COVID. And they're like my favorite colors. So like 200 like design, I mean, literally we named it as a designer color collection because I knew designers would love it for just like that restraint and those nuances that maybe like a homeowner that's just looking for a great wall color wouldn't understand. But for designers, they really get those nuances. So, you know, any other thoughts on this idea of minimalism? I think coming out of your commercial experience and going into residential, I think that's interesting. Do you see homeowners kind of interested in this idea of quiet luxury?
I do. I think people are ready now to like get out of the like white and gray world of like flipping houses.
Yes, 100%.
That was like really prevalent there for a while
for 10
and everything
years,
was gray.
10 years. Yeah. Yes, it was a long time.
And everything was gray and white. And I think homeowners are now really like they're thirsty for depth. And so this quiet luxury is nice in the way that it's minimal, but it doesn't like you can layer a ton into this space, but it can be like selected, right? So these can be your heirloom pieces. You can bring back your grandma's table and it's going to look very beautiful in a space that is just refined and like edited in a way.
Yes. Oh, that's a
good
word.
I think people are craving like some coziness and something that feels like it's been there for a while rather than the like, oh, this is a flipped house.
Agreed, right? Those homes were sometimes antiseptic, right? They just felt like very like scandy, you know, so restrained, so edited that you lost a lot of the warmth. And so that's what I'm most excited about. You know, obviously COVID was a huge impact on color and things got very natural and very nature inspired very quickly. And that was important. Yeah. And now it's kind of pushing us into this new expression of neutral, which is much, much warmer. You know, we're not going back to builder beige. I don't want people to be like, oh no, we can't go back to 2002, but it's like mushroom tones. It's like a new interpretation. And this idea of quiet luxury has like such importance there.
Yeah.
So I love it. So I love your thoughts on this. This was amazing. If people want to see more of your work, how can they find you?
Yeah. So Leo Rose Interior Design is my website and then at Leo Rose Interiors on Instagram too.
Love it. Well, be sure to check out our Designer of the Month page that features Megan and this great project. And thank you so much for joining us on Color Mixology. This was great.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find Nicholas at nicholasobede.com. and at Nicholas_Obede on Instagram. To see the Chrysalis palette and other colors of the 2025 Color Mix Forecast and order paint samples, visit swcolorforecast.com. If you enjoyed the conversation, please consider subscribing, leaving us a review, and telling the other design and color curious people in your life all about color mixology. Tune in next time for another amazing conversation on color trend forecasting and today's design world. See you next time on Color Mixology.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Labs.